Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We'd like to share a special program with Poets Reading the News. They're a digital newspaper bridging poetry and journalism, and they call it Journalism in Verse. Stay tuned for an hour with Poets Reading the News in this Project Censored special. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We'd like to have a special program here at the Project Censored Show. We're going to feature this week Poets Reading the News for the entire hour. Those of you who have been tuning into the show the last few weeks or last couple months have noticed that we've had the Poets Reading the News. It's journalism in verse. A lot of the stories that are covered are some of the same stories we cover at Project Censored. Though instead of doing it in a traditional independent journalistic vein or in a nonfiction vein, these are poets. And at Project Censored, we've long honored creativity and the arts. And in fact, there's a long history going back through social justice movements, utilizing the arts and creativity as a way to tell stories, as a way to communicate about stories in different communities and in ways that people may be more receptive to. Poets Reading the News is a digital newspaper bridging poetry and journalism, and they call it Journalism in Verse. Who are they? Well, it's Elavive Newton and Jenna Spagnola in Oakland, California. They met while students at Mills College and reconnected through the Oakland poetry scene just in time to create a poetry journal. They're both independently active in the San Francisco Bay Area creative scene. You can learn more at poetsreadingthenews.com. At heart, they are a newspaper. The revelation being that their copy is pure verse, produced by a diverse staff of poet journalists from around the world, copy edited according to AP-style guidelines. They're a nonpartisan newspaper, so the viewpoints expressed in their poetry reflect the beliefs of the poet responsible for each piece, not the publication as a whole. The community of writers on the Poets Reading the News site spans disciplines, ideologies, and geographies, and they publish renowned poets and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists, as well as emerging writers. So again, at Project Censored, we've been happy to feature Poets Reading the News these last couple of months, and we'd like to today feature Elavive Newton and Jenna Spagnola doing what they do best, poets reading the news.
Mickey, thank you for that introduction. I'm Elavive Newton.
I'm Jenna Spagnolo, and we are the co-editors of Poets Reading the News. You can find us on the web at poetsreadingthenews.com, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're really excited to spend the next hour with you sharing poetry about the past year, which has been a bit of a whirlwind. We're going all the way back to January, and we're going to share at least one poem from every month. The thing about Project Censor that we love so much, and the reason that we're collaborating with them, is because we are both invested as organizations in providing access to stories that get underreported. Not only are we sharing first-person perspectives from all around the world about what it feels like to be living in the current news cycle, we're also doing it in a way that is poetic, artistic, and deeply human.
Without further ado, we actually have quite a bit of poetry to get through, and I would like to introduce, as our January choice, Philip Metres and his poem, American Poetry.
American poetry should never be dipped to any person or vessel, nor touch anything beneath it, ground or hood or commercial merchandise. Always let poetry fall free. Never use as drapery, festooned, tied up or back, or as a covering for anything. Place nothing on poetry. Don't use it for receiving, holding, carrying, or delivering. Poetry should not be impressed on napkins or boxes, embroidered on cushions or handkerchiefs, anything designed for temporary use. When it's no longer a fitting emblem, destroy it in a dignified way, preferably by burning.
The reason why we wanted to start with this is because it breaks down this extremely formal way of looking at poetry as a part of the ivory tower and brings it into the fore as a way of using words for political action.
And of course, this poem was derived from how you're supposed to treat the American flag. It just feels like a really appropriate way to kick off this segment of Poets Reading the News, because poetry touched everything this year.
And also, it's a great way to kick off 2017, right, which was a year of reckoning, where we figured out what symbols were helpful to us, what propaganda meant, what fascism meant, what democracy meant. In a lot of ways, I think that the American public has been educating themselves deeply in the Trump era. And part of that is these independent radio shows like the one we're on today. Next up, in February, we have an incredible piece from Ciara Freeman called Alt Facts.
Alternative Facts, Part 1. Black women don't die like black boys in this country. That's a myth. That's getting away from the real problem. Black boys don't even die like black people say. Black people just talking to hear themselves. One last time. Alternative Facts Part 2. Emmett Till winked at that white girl. White girls never lie. A lie is something black people do when caught in the wrong range at the right time. Alternative Facts Part 3. Sandra Bland killed herself. That's it. That's what happened. And it is sort of like being black or Arab in this country. You are wrong. You are dangerous. You did this to yourself. Alternative Facts Part 4. Rape is simple, and so are women. All you need is one man to explain it all away. Alternative Facts Part 5. Everyone loves America. We are the main character, so we're the best character-wise. We are the most loved country, seriously. Everyone wants to be here, whether they like it or not. It is the dream. If we have to put people to sleep to see it, then so be it. But they will see whether they like it or not. I, for one, love the place. I can't even tell you how many people died for me to be here. Alternative Facts Part 6. Donald Trump never said that, so I have nothing to worry about. This is just paranoia. This is all a dream. Martin Luther King got his dream. Racism ended the moment a white man with a gun shot him. I need to relax. They got this covered. It's not my blood they are covering it in. I'm not black. I'm not a woman. I'm not queer. I don't have a reason to lie. This is normal. I don't even exist. I'm not writing this like a will. I don't think I'm that close to a seance.
Were we ever so glad to see that in our inbox?
Yeah, it really speaks to that moment where post-truth was everything in the politics.
It's really confronting a lot of false narratives that are not exclusive to Trump, but American narratives that we tell ourselves about these events that are systemic, patterned, ritualized even. Freeman really points out alt facts are the lies we tell ourselves to keep the system the same.
One thing that really struck me in reading Project Censored's 25 top censored stories of 2017, killings by police are not inevitable. They are the result of policy actions. There was a September 2016 study by Campaign Zero, which is a police reform group. The study examined police departments in 91 of the nation's largest cities, found that departments with stricter use of force regulations killed significantly fewer people. But by continuing these narratives, it doesn't allow for us to find these solutions.
This is a work by Nilanjana Baumick, who is a New Delhi-based journalist, about the demonetization happening in India.
Just imagine if all of the cash you had was overnight suddenly going to become worthless. Let's let Nilanjana's work speak about the human impacts of this decision.
Touching. Where's the cash? It turned to ash at the stroke of midnight. Our lexicons added a new word. Demonetization. Synonym, dehumanization. Brutes bare their glittering teeth at human misery panic. Spew thick, luscious platitudes. A slippery slope of gossamer. A contortionist's trick. Touching. The ATM exudes a very nihilistic sigh. Dead, like the long meandering queues, shocked into sweaty, beady silence of tired limbs and missed work days, of silent work sites, queues of desolate workers boarding trains, back home, no work, no cash. This month is going to be tough, and the next, A man asks for help outside a bank. He looks ruffled. He has never used a card. He doesn't read numbers or letters. But the government says he must, and overnight. Because in a world of plenty, the poor is fast. Fall in line or return to dust, cha-ching. In the villages, the harvests pile up. The kharif crops wait. The rabi hasn't been sown yet. Where are the workers? They've all gone back home. To empty kitchens and empty stomachs. No money, no food, cha-ching. Where are the elderly? They're queuing up in the banks. Because you see, they get preference in the queue. Because many can barely stand. Trembling hands tottering on their walking sticks. Looking for a chair to rest their backs. But the queue is merciless. Cha-ching. Where are the leaders? Sacrifice, sustenance, serve. There they are. Hear them roar. Soldiers are fighting in the borders, saving your bloody ass. Staying hungry, thirsty for days? Where's your spine? Why do you so whine? Train your mind. A human being can stay hungry for 21 days. After, you die. Of course, for the country. Surely you can do that much if you're bothered by corruption and graft. The black money hoarders, remember? This is all for your own good. So move it, queue up, be brave. Meanwhile, I have a flight to catch, deals to crack, all to serve you, my compatriots. Cha-ching! Where is the black money? In the rusted tin piggy bank with the broken ear? Or is it inside the worn pillow cover, stained with hair oil? Or maybe in the pockets of that much-mended blazer bought in a 70% off sale 8 years back? Or maybe hidden in the spice boxes in the kitchen? Or maybe in the meager savings accounts? Cha-ching! In the house of the vultures, merrymaking is in full swing. Clinks, clackles, loud cackles, low conversation, spit-spewing hiccups, crisp suits, ornate shawls, eavesdropping chandeliers, absent-minded waiters worried about their cash tips and whether the neighborhood ATM will have any cash left when they finish their shift. They're used to the diamonds and solitaires, the bottomed smiles and the play of light and shadow on the folds of the necks that tremble from the loud guffaws. The money is safely parked in real estate in India and Dubai, and name your country on the map, a Swiss bank, anyone. It's all for the common good. A man slaps the cocktail waiter jocularly. A sprig of a kid, hardly 16 or 17. He's pleased for being noticed, for being singled out for this piece of wisdom. The common man is such an endearing fool. In their world, light cuts through the darkness only in installments. And in everything that glitters is always a hope that it is gold. Who are we? What is this world? Are we nobodies? Do we stand for nothing? What is our future? It cannot just be a jeremiad, a long elegy. How long have we been dead? Cha-ching.
That was Nilanjana Baumix. Cha-ching.
So bringing us back to U.S. news, we wanted to talk about the culture of bigotry and hatred that is so alive and well here. Many marginalized and oppressed groups experienced an uptick in hate crimes after Trump was elected. And our co-editor, Al Aviv, came up with this reaction to the fact that New York City's subway systems got covered in anti-Semitic graffiti. This is called On a Subway Car in Manhattan, History is Remade. And as a content warning, this poem begins with an anti-Semitic remark that was scrawled on the walls.
Jews belong in the oven. Swastikas and shibboleths appear in ink on a New York City subway. Transporter cars for a population of 8 million residents. Passengers search their belongings for instruments of cleansing. Purell, alcohol, tissue papers. They surround the glass en masse to erase. The letters and lines are dissolved, one by one, back into nothingness. The process is thoroughly documented. Stories and photographs emerge later on social media platforms. Those waiting places where the innocent board unaware that history keeps burning so as to reach unfamiliar destinations.
That was Al Aviv Newton's poem, So this was in reaction to a story that went viral, right?
Yeah, there were actually images of this all over, of a man erasing a swastika. Early in the year, these attacks on synagogues and Jewish cemeteries and then public venues began to appear. But the reaction to this one was really special because the people entered the train, they looked around at each other, they began to take down this graffiti, and the train has a very special significance within Jewish history because transporter cars are what conveyed Jews from all over Europe to concentration camps. And New York's population is roughly equivalent to how many people died in the Holocaust. And this cleansing that occurred on the train was like this revision of the kind of cleansing that happened in Europe.
Ethnic cleansing.
Right. And also, of course, the documentation, which was so thorough by the Nazi regime. Here we're seeing that again transformed by people demonstrating what they're doing when they encounter bigotry and hatred in the public sphere. They're confronting it and destroying it. And it creates a sense of community to combat that together. I think that that was a really beautiful model for what we can do in the future when we see things like that.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
The Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are featuring poets reading the news. In the next segment, we'll hear more from Elaviv Newton and Jenna Spagnolo and poets reading the news. Please stay with us.
Moving on to April through Aleppo Portrait, which is written by Devin Balwit.
And this poem deals with an image that was taken of a man that is sitting at his bed in his bombed-out apartment in Aleppo, in Syria.
From Mohammed Mohaydin Anas. The man smokes a pipe amidst ruin, the light from the shattered bay windows, exquisite. 5 years back, the slatted blinds were whole, the furniture white, and not from plaster dust. Neighbors used to wave from the opposing balconies. He could open curtains to let them in. The books were his darlings, not water-damaged, not flung. The samovar came down for guests, tea around a table, not rubble. How proud he was of this space, the way his thoughts could move in it, the way conversations had room to nestle in its basket. At 70, he may not live to see it rebuilt, so he accustoms himself to brokenness. His hand-cranked Victrola still works. He listens to a requiem, of course. He is a cultured man.
And that was Devin Balwit's Aleppo Portrait, which you can also find online at www.poetsreadingthenews.com. And this poem deals with something that has definitely been covered by Project Censored before. Actually, in 2016, their book of essays covered Syria's war being spurred by a contest for gas delivery to Europe rather than Muslim sectarianism. Syrians are famous for having such an elegant, sophisticated culture, are, if they haven't fled already, living in very different circumstances from when this war began. In case you're tuning in now, we are the co-editors of Poets Reading the News, and right now you're listening to Project Censored for an hour-long look back at poetry of 2017. Up next is a poet journalist that goes by the name of Abigail Carl Klassen, and this piece is called Body Slam.
This piece came after there was an incredible story in the news about Montana congressional candidate Greg Gianforte, who ended up winning, actually, who body slammed Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs.
On representative democracy, reflections on the First Amendment and the body slamming of the Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs by Montana congressional candidate Greg Gianforte. Representative Jeff Flake, Republican, Arizona. This looks like a group of reporters that has not been body slammed. Representative Louis Gohmert, Republican, Texas. We didn't have a course on body slamming when I went to school. I missed that course. Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican, California. It's not appropriate behavior, unless the reporter deserved it. Representative Mark Sanford, Republican, South Carolina. I think people will be careful not to make him mad. Representative Leonard Lance, Republican, New Jersey. I, of course, hope that the Republican is successful today because I think his views are the views of the people of Montana. Representative Greg Gianforte's campaign spokesperson, Republican, Montana. It is unfortunate that this aggressive behavior from a liberal journalist created this scene.
And that was published in May of 2017. These are pretty outrageous quotes, and I think they sound unbelievable, but they are all verbatim, the reactions.
I wanted to read the quote of Ben Jacobs, who is the Guardian reporter who got assaulted. He said, "He took me to the ground. I think he wailed on me once or twice. He got on me, and I think he hit me. This is the strangest thing that has ever happened to me in reporting on politics." This was after he asked Greg Gianforte, who's a tech millionaire endorsed by Donald Trump, about the Republican health care plan.
So up next, we have a poem by Lauren Camp called The Problem with Testimony. And this is an erasure poem created entirely by quotes taken from Attorney General Jeff Sessions' statements to the Senate Committee on June 13th, 2017, regarding his role in James Comey's firing and collusion with Russia.
If any brief interaction occurred, then I left the hotel. Is entirely beside the point. I have no knowledge to hurt this country. That's what's so important to control. At all times, I have earned a reputation. The innuendos, the leaks, the fraudsters and the terrorists. I don't recall. Every one of our citizens, a continuing exchange of information, intermediaries, Russians, and I am unable to comment. In an effort to impede or influence this campaign, pretty breathtaking usurpation, I am blessed indeed. If that conversation moves into certain areas, that's the way that should work, and not go in an improper direction. There may be other privileges that apply. If he hasn't, and I'm in error, if any such occurred, I know nothing but what I've read in the paper. As I recall, I don't recall, until and if I ever, or otherwise involve, maybe I ought to listen again. It's often very problematic to have persons not cooperating. I have racked my brain. I don't recall, not recall. It's better on that side. It's just like through the looking glass. I mean, what is this? In good faith, the next thing you know, it was a little conversation. We have got to restore a regular order principle to refresh my recollection before disclosing. I don't have a detailed memory. A lot of people were at the convention. I need to be correct as best I can. It makes me nervous. I may have had some conversations. There's always been rules. I supported everything. It was more egregious than I even understood at the time. It probably would have been better to never have talked. Once you get down that road, I remember pushing back on it. We may have discussed that. Those teams have been working and will continue to work.
So that was Lauren Camp's The Problem with Testimony.
Taken entirely by quotes that Jeff Sessions himself said to the Senate Committee, which is a really huge document if you look at the transcript. And this reflects a lot of work.
What I really like about it is that it allows the reader to see between the lines at the brief moments where Jeff Sessions was revealing a little bit more than he intended to.
We are the co-editors of Poets Reading the News, the world's only newspaper written by poets.
Speaking on the Project Censored show about our top poems of 2017.
And that content really leads us to the next poem, which is by a poet named Nico Amador, and was written in August after a pretty startling display in Charlottesville of white supremacy.
Country. Mine is made of glass, and glass, I've learned, can be placed in the mouth, can move through the body, if chewed carefully. Smallest repetitions of breaking a thing down to dust. My country, until now, I have loved you enough to swallow.
Thank you to Nico for that work. So this poem really does an incredibly beautiful job in its brevity of expressing that this is not something new, but it feels like in 2017 we really punctured that veil of comfort that a lot of Americans have been using to convince themselves we have a certain kind of history. And this poem deals with a really shocking event because it was so flagrant, so unapologetic, so shameless during Charlottesville, and so confrontational. That same weekend that these white supremacists did a march, one of them also got into a car and ran into a crowd of counter-protesters, killing one woman, Heather Heyer, who was there as part of the Black Lives Matter resistance. Poets Reading the News published quite a number of poems during Charlottesville and after Charlottesville. So if you go to our archives, you'll find a lot of poetry dealing with this. With America really staring itself in the face this year, appraising itself again and seeing a lot of racism that had been very expertly hidden through bureaucracy and normative culture. Thank you to Nico for that work. So for our next work, we're moving away from man-made disasters into natural disasters that are also man-made disasters. We're moving into the realm of hurricanes.
And climate change.
So we got a number of submissions from poets in Texas describing what it was like to survive Hurricane Harvey, the destruction that was occurring during it, and especially afterwards.
Really reporting from the ground.
This piece is by J. Todd Hawkins, and it's called Leaving Houston.
Our evacuation order came late at night. The wind chime pealing only lightly over the doorbell. We spent the night packing what we thought was irreplaceable, but left so much to make room for gas cans, cases of water, diapers. Left before dawn, east on 10, then north on the Beltway, it's silly. What scared me the most was the missing traffic. There were no cars tucked in the sheets of rain, and I knew what the ending world would look like as the water reached the hubcaps. Suddenly, the first cars began racing at me, speeding the wrong way down the highway, piercing the monochrome shadows at full speed. The exits must be closed. They were looking for a way out, not remembering openings are problems too. Wrists, bottles, levees. We all had problems before all this. I prayed a driver would not kill us. The baby and you, my Catherine Barley, terrified to see me dead in the rain as the water reached the fenders. Everything peeled in the gray, lifting in lithe curls from what tried to hold it. Everything left, running backwards, except the clocks whose heavy hands mashed hours down through muddy skin. Everything ran the opposite of nature, except the rain, which still fell down, and the water which rose up to meet it.
That was Leaving Houston by J. Todd Hawkins. who wrote this poem inspired by a friend who was fleeing the Houston suburbs with his wife and infant son. And I especially love the line, "Everything ran the opposite of nature, except the rain, which still fell down, and the water which rose up to meet it." It really speaks to how backwards the world seems now that climate change is having such huge impacts on our communities and creating these natural disasters, which are certainly accelerating and becoming a new way of normal as habitat destruction and human intervention begin to really distort the natural cycles that we were used to before. On September 20th, Hurricane Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico. And in early October, Donald Trump visited the island and congratulated Puerto Ricans on their very low death toll of 16 people, especially compared to what he called a real catastrophe, like Katrina. Since then, the official death toll has climbed to 64 people, but independent journalistic investigations have shown that the actual death count is likely above 1,000. So we'd like to share some original poetry by a poet from New York based in Puerto Rico regarding the large-scale devastation to Puerto Rico's infrastructure as the aftermath of Hurricane Maria proves to be far more deadly than the hurricane itself. This is called My Back by Anna Portnoy Brimmer.
A garden of bleeding parasols, burning baldachins, cresting canopies, a kingdom of coiling blotches, spiraling like hurricanes across the length of my spine, crumbling infrastructure. Every night I lay on my wet mattress, both culprit and lover, only home left in this tropical gutter, above surviving splintered framing the night, universal tarp, weeping its misery onto my ridge of flowering bones, a mildewed masterpiece, sole patch of fertile landscape growing shade. I used to know the rivels of my roof, the folds of my back. Now they are one and the same.
That was My Back by Anna Portnoy Brimmer in a very beautiful reading from the front lines of Puerto Rico.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's show, we're hearing poets reading the news, journalism in verse, from Elavive Newton and Jenna Spagnolo. Please stay with us.
Next up, we're going to be talking about one of the most underreported stories in 2017, according to Project Censored, which is the fact that there was a huge rise in the number of trans people murdered.
And you can actually find a whole chapter on this in the new Project Censored 2018 book, completely dedicated to this phenomenon of underreported trans deaths in the United States. We have a reading by Torin Greathouse channeling the mourning and the rage of trans murder in the United States.
Translation guide for conversations after another trans death in memory of Ali Steinfeld. She's dead. List of names lengthens like a shadow. She was so young. How old are you again? The first reports called her a man. The body is never something we truly own. I couldn't read the whole article. A needle hurts less if you don't watch it make an entrance of you. be safe. Isn't this the worst way to end up on the news? How are you holding up? I know what the suicide statistics look like for you. Just couldn't read it. Isn't turning away from roadkill an act of mercy? It's all so gruesome. We expect you pretty, even in death. They won't call it a hate crime. They did the cops' work for them. Where did you want to move again? Are you researching colleges or graveyards? She was so young. How far was walking out of boyhood from a grave? Are you safe? Already, I imagine your body becoming a headline. Say her name. We have learned to love you best as headlines. Say her name until another blooms fresher from a newspaper page. Her name, another in a procession of mourners, the anonymity of black clothing. She's dead, and 17 forever. And 17 forever, and 17, and I'm so glad you're safe. For now, she was so young. How have you survived this long? Say her name, but it won't bring her back. You're so brave. I know I will outlive you. Are you afraid? You should be.
That was Torin Greathouse's Translation Guide for Conversations After Another Trans Death. That was written after the murder of Ali Steinfeld, a 17-year-old in Missouri.
Yeah, that was a very, very powerful and emotional reading by Torin Greathouse.
The Human Rights Campaign put out a report in November of 2017 that said that it was the deadliest year on record for trans people, and 21 out of the 25 who were murdered were trans people of color. The report also noted that many states, especially in the South, don't have any laws that are protecting transgender people from discrimination. 16 out of the 25 who were murdered during that time period were in the South.
At least three of these murders occurred in Louisiana, for example. And another issue in the news is when news outlets are refusing to use the preferred gender pronouns. One of the reasons that trans murder gets underreported is because media outlets won't recognize when someone is trans, because they'll be paying attention to their death record, which might not reflect a legal change of gender, but they live as trans people and identify that way.
So for October, we'd like to share a poem by Mark Allen DiMartino titled Morpheus in West Virginia, which regards the Sackler family earning billions of dollars from the opioid crisis, which has claimed over 200,000 lives since 1999, with the hardest hit state being West Virginia, where by mid-October 2017, over 884 people had died from overdose deaths.
A scion of robber baron philanthropists, whose last name is synonymous with pain, has, through the toxic advertising mists, made murder legal, elegant, humane. Like Jagger's Lucifer, he wears a tie, outfitted in the finest Italian suits, possessing all that money cannot buy, prestige and prominence the world salutes. The dead of West Virginia are his keep, couples with needles hooked into their arms, their babies born into narcotic sleep, more dust from opiates than firearms. Local mortuaries have run out of beds to stretch the corpses on. In this shell game, the blue pills were swapped deftly for the reds by Morpheus. I hope you guess his name.
That was Mark Allen DiMartino's Morpheus in West Virginia.
Since 1999, 200,000 Americans have died from overdoses related to OxyContin. 145 Americans are now dying daily from opioid overdoses. It's a common thing for people to start with prescription painkillers and then move to heroin.
And to give a sense of scale to this crisis, the National Center for Health Statistics is reporting that for the first time since the 1920s, the U.S. life expectancy dropped by 2 percentage points in both 2016 and 2017,
And this is being directly linked to the opioid crisis, which took 53,000 lives in 2016 alone. And if this continues, this pattern, into 2018, it'll be the first time that the United States has experienced a 3-year drop in life expectancy since the Spanish influenza 100 years ago.
So the opioid crisis exists now on such a scale that it really can't be understated. And there's more behind this when we think about who's responsible for creating this epidemic. The Sackler family was responsible for engineering and marketing this drug, but it was doctors that prescribed it and continue to do so. So for that reason, we'd like to feature a second work about the opioid epidemic
by a Boston poet based in Key West named Kurt Cole Eidsvig.
It's called Keeping the Beat.
1. They invented Oxycontin and put heroin out of business. Then they invented Narcan, too, just to keep them coming back for more. Doc Norman swore his autograph and signature looked the same to discerning eyes, because dude got so famous for finding back pains in disguise, people came from miles around just to hear his name out loud. They screamed with glee, and Sam Norman turned to Narcan before Narcan Sam. And he had a mural of a big bald eagle flying out in front of the American flag at his office suite down in Quincy Center, all those pre-4th celebrations at the door. 2. When they caught him selling script pads, signed and swirled for days, they confined him to house arrest, gave him a free ankle bracelet, waterproofed for his Newton swimming pool. Watch now on the news, the way they say cancer patients shouldn't have to pay for chemo if dope heads get free shots to bring them coming back to life. They forget to mention, we forget to mention, the subsidies we gave the pharmaceutical companies to build a better tax scam. They got slapped on the wrist, got fitted for an anklet. We flicked Bics to flesh and wore out silver bracelets. Like the last time I saw Collins, he swore he'd only use the needle for the juice. But they found him dead later the next day, swollen and ripped up like a bad report card is what he'd always say, bloated and dead like a back pain patient who caught a habit instead and couldn't find another way. 3. There's methadone mile and Quincy Center, and there's liquid handcuffs and sweet surrender. You can recognize a disease like you can recognize an enemy and still invite them back for more. First kid in Southie to get the bug got famous. No kidding, famous for catching it from the needle and not the sex. Boy bought a Zorro mask and starred in snuff films produced in a warehouse down the combat zone before the feds found the meth lab out back. You read the news about the gas masks and long, slow, poisonous fumes. The fella tied up to a chair in what used to be Fort Point, he had on S&M gear, like there'd been a party with no one else invited, except whoever tied him to the chair and left. Except whoever tied him to a chair and left him there, we said, we asked, we noticed. There are different definitions of mineshaft. There are different forms of a canary. Where are you with the sharp fingernails for untying, the pedicures we helped pay for, and when are you ever coming back? 4. 'Twas the firefighters who called methadone liquid handcuffs first, because they watched bruised vampires and zombies stagger back for more and more each and every day. You say vampire and think of movies, but we hear the needles. You read zombie and apocalypse descends. We hear the thumping, needless drum of shoes. So now, when first responders speak of strings, there's last chance singers belting out soundtracks of survival. You can call them puppet ropes or hanging nooses, the strangled straps of slow survival, and the dealers toss up sneakers knotted tight and let them hang or dangle down from telephone wires to show the spot to stand. Different dealers pay the MBTA to print flyers up with side effects, to be sure to ask your doctor for when you find a place to stand. Still now, as the dealers get different deals. 5. Be there still. Be still here. And come they will with magic packets close at hand. If you stare down at your lifeline long enough, every person can predict their future. problem now the police are having is giving Narcan with no strings attached. It's something close to loving, only arguing at death. To learn to love is to stop keeping score, they used to say. And so we save one and two and count to six and stop. And we count to six once more and stop. Pump the chests and earn the silver linings now and stop. Our spoons cook off and mix with melting as we learn to mix once more. So every one of us has silver coursing now beneath our skin and legs and arms. A city filled with tin men, hearing nothing more of drums, a sea of people respond to something else without the benefit of heartbeat sounds to guide us anymore.
That was Kurt Cole Eidsvig's Keeping the Beat, and you can listen to that work on our website at poetsreadingthenews.com. And if you're just joining us now, we are the editors of Poets Reading the News, and we're looking back at 2017 through poetry.
And Eidsvig's poem is so powerful in taking the reader through a landscape that does not resemble any of the traditional stereotypes of what drug abuse looks like. In this world, the drug dealer is a physician, and the user is simply anyone that's being prescribed opioids.
So in 2016, the DEA took action against fewer than 500 doctors for prescribing painkillers. But that same year, we saw over 20,000 overdose deaths just from prescription drugs alone.
So when doctors thrive off of financial incentives that obviously completely override the Hippocratic Oath to harm none, it really paints a very dismal picture of what it feels like to be a person seeking healthcare in the United States or dealing with a chronic pain problem, knowing that you have to trust your doctor not to get you addicted to one of the most easily addictive drugs on the planet, opium. And so the question becomes one of accountability. And how do we give justice to patients that are being prescribed drugs that they are likely to become addicted to and possibly die of?
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. On today's show, we're hearing poets reading the news, journalism in verse, from Elavive Newton and Jenna Spagnolo. Stay tuned.
Next up, we'd like to turn to a subject that we editors at Poets Reading the News have had ample cause to publish about this past year. It regards gun violence, and this next poem was written in the aftermath of the Sutherland Springs shooting in Texas that took 26 lives.
This is Paul Bone reading his poem, Even Here.
The rifle, the truck, the church, the pew, the pastor, the hymn, the prayer. The tenor and alto, soprano and bass, the dresses, the cloth to bear. The Savior and grace, the wounds, the blood, the bones, the boards, the splinters. The major chords, yet the minor key through which the bullet enters. The altar call, the empty shells, the sheep on his good right hand. The least of these, the not yet born, the haircuts, the wedding bands. The thoughts, the prayers, the shrug, the wish, the Lord and his setting sun, the bigger graves and the smaller ones, the guns, the guns, the guns.
Yeah, that was a beautiful reading. It feels like nothing's sacred anymore, especially since Sutherland Springs happened, that you can't imagine an American place or space that is immune to gun violence anymore.
That's really well said.
I'm a really big fan of the Gun Violence Archive, and you can find their website at gunviolencearchive.org. So, for example, there were over 59,000 incidents of gun violence in 2017 in the United States, and over 15,000 people died this year, with over 336 mass shootings this year alone. So if you look at a map of the United States, it literally looks like it's bleeding out, because from coast to coast, there are mass shootings everywhere. Indifference and motionlessness has been the official reaction to a lot of this gun violence. And there's really no way to downplay how much that impacts what it feels like to live here and the kind of violence we can expect to see coming into 2018, because there has been no restraint, and we have a very pro-NRA government in place right now, Republican-controlled Senate, president, and with all of these court nominees, our future is looking very pro-gun.
That's a great point, Elle.
So we actually had two for November, because it's impossible to talk about November in any singular way, and like, this is really painful for us to have to distill.
It's so hard, yeah, to have to break down our immense archive and bring you just a handful of pieces from 2017. But here we are, and we hope that you're enjoying this. We're almost done with our recollection of 2017 through poetry, through the archives of poetsreadingthenews.com.
We're moving on to something a little bit more global in scale. This is a piece that really shows the new face of climate change. It's inspired by a video by Paul Nicklin, a photographer for National Geographic, and what he saw, a starving polar bear in an iceless Arctic who was only hours from dying. This video got shared a lot on the internet. I don't know how many times. Hell of times. It went viral on Instagram, it went viral on Facebook. And it's a heart-wrenching video, and luckily we had this wonderful poet named Rebecca Murin in England who produced this beautiful poem, Polar Bear.
And how can you deny the bones of them? The sharp angle of pain across an iceless landscape. Barren ground of mighty beast made spare and cadaverous. The tundra shifts, an expanse of war and distance. And how can we bear to be indifferent? To see each quiet survival as anything but a white orison from the wild to mankind? Do you see freedom? The shape of our dreaming arched, a crooked form shook by Arctic wind. We took what roared, was brilliant, and laid it to waste. The earth grieves in high tide, and another polar bear is made body and still.
And that was Rebecca Murin reading Polar Bear, really reacting to the loss of biodiversity that we're experiencing during this time of climate change and habitat destruction.
She describes the polar bear as a white orison from the wild to mankind. And it really feels that way, that in December we see this image of a polar bear getting shared amongst the human community so thoroughly.
Yeah, these issues of climate change and habitat destruction are on such huge structural levels. They're about the government, they're about huge industries' decisions. And so it can feel difficult to be forced to witness all this and have so few tools to change the course of our human direction.
Or to combat the misinformation when science is considered unscientific or unworthy of attention.
And there also are solutions that we've already created to find cleaner ways of accessing energy, to find better ways of transporting ourselves, to find more sustainable methods of harvesting food. It's just a matter of priorities at this point. Moving forward into 2018, will we as a people shift our priorities to be in line with the earth as they need to be? One of the most disturbing trends of 2017 has been to see dismantling of so much environmental regulation that has been put in place by previous administrations. You know, a big part of it is equity, too. A lot of the people who are committing the most damage to our environment through pollution and through habitat destruction are not feeling the effects of climate change. Marginalized poor people are being forced more and more to withstand enormous pressure from natural disasters, and they are just not the people who are committing the most damage. So it's a grave injustice. I think this year has been a year of reckoning. It's been a year of witnessing enormous change and also educating ourselves about a lot of the power structures that have been complicit in the destruction that we're viewing through this poetry. Yeah. And so I'm hoping that 2018 will be a year where people rise up and commit themselves to a new direction.
Yeah, it's definitely true that 2017 has felt like a turning point, where it feels like the things that we were talking about are really beginning to manifest, from natural disasters to the worst gun violence. Things no longer feel hypothetical at all. 2018, it's a year of determining what our reaction to all of these new realities is going to be. Are we going to be taking action? Are we going to be continuing our complicity?
And that concludes Poets Reading the News, looking back at 2017 through poetry. I'm Elavive Newton.
I'm Jenna Spagnolo.
And we are the editors of Poets Reading the News. You can find all of these works at our website, www.poetsreadingthenews.com. And we also invite you to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/poetsreadingthenews. Thank you again for listening, as well as to all of the poets who generously provided audio recordings of their work. And especially huge thank you to Mickey Huff and Project Censored for giving us this power hour of poetry. You can learn more about Project Censored and the vital work they're doing on their website at projectcensored.org.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we featured for the hour poets reading the news, journalism in verse. You can learn more at poetsreadingthenews.com.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
You've been tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Executive producers for this program are, of course, myself and Peter Phillips. Our producer is Anthony Fest. The Project Censored Show has been on the air for 7 years now, emanating from KPFA, Free Speech Radio, in Berkeley, California. We air on some 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York, and we work with many community radio stations and other activist groups. To learn more about the work of Project Censored, go to projectcensored.org. You can find archives of our programs at our website, and you can also find special podcasts and programming. You can support our work at Patreon, again at projectcensored.org. We welcome our newest station in Petaluma, KPCA, and again, we hope to acquire even more stations in the new year. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Project Censored Show, reporting the news that didn't make the news. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu.